and good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis, and late Patty Fink is very late. She will be on her way in, or she is on her way in. She texted us, and she either texted while driving, or she won't be here for a while. We don't have a guest today because we wanted to catch up on some of the news.
Some of the news. Should we? I guess technically next weekend is our year-end show.
Yes.
Okay.
Although next week we have Mark Farris coming on as our guest. And let's start there. Mark is, he's been on our show several times. He was one of the marriage equality plaintiffs in Texas. He won at the trial court in federal court in San Antonio. The case was appealed to the Fifth Circuit. It looked like we were going to win in the Fifth Circuit, but they never wrote an opinion. And then Obergefell came out in June, and the Fifth Circuit affirmed the lower court's decision. So Dimitman, is it Dimitman or it's one of the two women in San Antonio who were on our show. That the case is named after Mark and Vic. They were suing for the right to get married in Texas, and Cleo and Nicole were suing. I can't remember. Dimitman is one of them,
I can't either.
And the other one is the one that the case is named after.
They were suing for the right for their marriage to be recognized.
To be recognized because they were married out of state.
Right.
We won completely in the lower court, and the lower court, which oversees that ruling, has been extremely on our side on this. This is Patty DeLeon. Patty, will you please drive? Patty is texting me while she's driving, and we know that's illegal. So one thing that the legislature did pass this year, and we can talk about this, this is news, is you can't drive and text, Patty.
So I'm
meandering. Mark and Vic have been on several times. They live in Plano. Mark is running for state senate.
He is.
He'll be on our show next week talking about his campaign. He has one opponent on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, Philip Huffhines, who is Don Huffhines' brother. Don Huffhines is the state senator in the district that covers from about the middle of Oak Lawn all the way up to about where we are right now. And I'm saying that looking at Laron and people at home are listening. Where are you? We're on Central Expressway, just a little bit above Royal Lane. And I'm not sure where the district changes to the other district, the one that Mark's running for, but it's somewhere between here and LBJ. And he'll be running against either Philip Huffhines or, what is her name, Paxton's wife.
Oh.
Yeah, Ken Paxton's wife. Ken Paxton is our indicted attorney general. You didn't have enough with, I'm not telling you who to vote for, but if you don't have enough with one indicted character, vote for another one. Feel free. Mark is running for state senate, but there are so many LGBT people running for office from this area. For the Texas House of Representatives, Jessica Gonzalez is running against Roberto Alonso in a West Oak Cliff seat. Roberto has been in the state house 15 years, something like that. Whoever wins the primary wins the election. There's no Republican opponent. Julie Johnson has an opponent. Julie was on our show a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. She does have an opponent in the Democratic primary, and whoever wins that one faces Matt Rinaldi, who is the incumbent who wrote the bathroom bill. Finn Jones is running against Tony Tinderholt. Tony Tinderholt, Patty just came in with her
pink cap. I'm loving the cap.
It's my fuzzy hat.
Tony Tinderholt is a family values Republican on his fifth wife, who the picture I have of them is at a Playboy party. So good family values. And anyway, so Finn Jones running against them, against him for the U.S. House. Lori Birch is running for a seat in Plano, basically, although it comes down into Dallas some. And John Duncan is running for a seat, part of Tarrant County, and then Ellis and Navarro County. And John's seat, or the seat that John is running for, what's his name, is retiring from it.
Penis picture?
Yes.
Joe Barton.
Yeah. Joe Barton, thank you. And Joe Barton withdrew from the race just days before the end of the filing period. There are 13 people on the Republican side running in the primary who just jumped right in. And then for governor, we have two gay people running, Jeffrey Payne and Lupe Valdez.
Mm-hmm. And I pulled for her draw this, on the ballot this week.
Oh, you did the poll?
That's right.
Monday night, mm-hmm. we did the it's ballot order. Mm-hmm. So you draw for ballot order in Dallas County. And out of her 10 candidates for governor, and I drew number one for Lupe.
Yeah. Awesome.
So she was great. She called me afterward and was excited too. So,
You know, Jeffrey Payne is running a respectable campaign. He's hired an experienced campaign manager, and we'll see how he does. He's traveling the state. He's doing what he needs to do. He's out there online and good campaign. Lupe's better known, but really only in this area. People around the state kind of know, yeah, that Dallas lesbian sheriff.
She's more well known than you might think.
But best known here.
Best known here.
You know, here's where we follow her. However, if she gets on the ballot, that could affect a number of House races.
It could, and I would just be waiting for the moment when Abbott would say something sexist or homophobic or racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this would be
the chance to that.
About the lesbian Latina. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, and I'm saying she's a front runner. She is a front runner. The other front runner right now is Andrew White, who is Governor Mark White's son. And Friday, I got a mailer from him already. So.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, we'll see.
And just to catch up on the names that you know, you guys are struggling with as I pulled into the parking lot, that would be Angela Paxton.
Thank you, Angela.
And Philip Huffines, who's the twin brother of Don Huffines.
That's right.
Nicole
Demetman and Cleo DeLeon.
And DeLeon.
Right. Style DeLeon v. Perry, and then it became DeLeon v. Abbott.
You know, I know Cleo and
Nicole.
Yeah, Nicole. And I could not pull those last names. Anyway, we have so many LGBT people running for office from here. This new wave started with Omar, who ran for city council and won against an incumbent, which is a very rare thing to do. Jess Herbst, who's the mayor of New Hope up in Collin County, she came out as transgender. And the big story there, I want to have her on the show. I need to get in touch with her again. Because she's a character. I really like her. The big story is there's no story there. You know, she spent about 5 minutes explaining to the city council and the town, and they all went, oh, okay. Yeah, so.
And too bad it's not like that everywhere.
Right.
It's
the way it should be.
Yeah.
It's the way it should be. She's still with her wife. She's the one who had a little bit of trouble adjusting to it. Not really trouble. It took time to adjust to it.
Of course.
But they're still together because the way she put it was, Jess is my soulmate. So anyway, we're going to have her on sometime beginning of the year. But what do you think of all of these LGBT candidates and elected officials? You know, a bunch of trans people were elected in the November election.
And at our recent guest, Julie Johnson, in 115.
Right. We listed all the ones locally. But what do you think of all of these candidates that are running? What caused this? What started this, do you think?
Oh, I think it's not just LGBT. I think it's across the board, people said, I can step up and do this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's interesting, record number of women running for office across the country.
Mm-hmm. Emily Sliss reported, first reported a smaller number, but they said last cycle they had 900 women seeking their advice and endorsement across the country, and they went up to 22,000 women this cycle.
Wow.
This is huge. This is, there are women on the ballot, going to be on the ballot in the Democratic primary across Dallas County and across North Texas for almost every race. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And, LGBT
and it shouldn't
people,
be that it shouldn't be that amazing.
Because, it shouldn't be that amazing because we are 51% of the population.
Right, so you should have at least 20% of the elected officials.
It's 100 members of Congress. We only have 20 are women.
I'm just picking on Patty because I got my email today or my text message at a quarter of. I'm running very late today.
I've been sick all week. I've been really sick. I've had cooties all week.
A lot of people have.
Okay, so we have this great slate of candidates, and you know, I'll tell you what, any one of these people from the list of gay and lesbian and transgender candidates that are running are qualified. They're certainly qualified people. And we'll talk to Mark about this next week. So we'll get into specifics of different candidates a little bit next week. But I think it's fascinating that so many jumped in and decided, I can do this, and they're the right people to do it. You know, and each one has their own story. Like Julie said, one of her kids will be off to college, the other one will be in high school by then. She can be away for the 140 days of the legislative session. A couple of other people, like John Duncan running for Congress, you know, he said, he just didn't like the leadership in his district. He has a good plan to win. He's concentrating, you know, limited amount of money. He's concentrating on Tarrant County because that part of Tarrant County is Democratic. And he's going to concentrate on the Democratic votes to get them out. He knows he's not going to win big in Navarro County, you know.
So. It's kind of a similar challenge for the Democratic candidate, Kendall Scudder, out in Texas Senate District 2, which for the western border is basically East Dallas County, which is about as many votes as the other seven or eight counties, part of his district in East Texas. Mm-hmm. He was raised by two moms.
Huh.
Oh, interesting.
In East Texas.
Huh.
So... that's another.
Oh, and speaking of, two moms. Zach Walls
is running.
Who is the person who got up in front of the Iowa Senate, no, Judiciary Committee, and spoke about having been raised by two moms? This was back in about 2010 or 11. Mm-hmm. He started the group Scouts for Equality. And basically, he's the one that got the scouts to change their policy on gay scouts and gay scout leaders. The way he did it was he targeted the companies that were the biggest endowers of the Boy Scouts, like UPS and I can't remember who else. But he went to them and said, their policies contradict your giving policies. So you already are, you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing. You should not be giving money to the Boy Scouts as long as they discriminate. And it was millions of dollars that he got withdrawn from Boy Scouts in donation. A couple of the companies talked to the Boy Scouts, I think made their donations and said, this needs to be corrected within a certain period of time. We're not going to hurt you, but you need to do this. Anyway, and then he wrote a book, about having been raised by the two moms. Running for Iowa State Senate in a Democratic seat that is vacant, so he has a great chance.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, and maybe we'll have him on, and we can talk about all those things that he's done. He's all of 26.
So what about like Kendall Scudder? We should have them on the same show.
Oh, okay.
talked about running for state senate and being raised by two moms.
Tino, why don't we put that show together? I'm glad we're having our little meeting right now rather than doing a show, right. But that would be a good show.
26, but I don't know about Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
But Zach, very poised, well-spoken, smart young man.
Now, a lot of people met him in 2013. He was here and spoke at Black Tie Dinner. He was one of the featured speakers, and he was a great speaker.
Oh, yeah.
So then that was 5 years ago. He would have been all of 21 at the time. So, you know, great kid. What do you think Lupe Valdez being at the top of the ticket, if she wins, what do you think that does to the vote in Texas? Does it make a difference? Does it not make a difference? Does it get out Democratic votes even if she doesn't win? What do you think?
I think it's incredibly important that she's at the top of the ticket. Regardless of what you know many say about their particular candidate, Lupe's the strongest candidate on the Democratic side. I mean, Andrew White being son of Mark White's what all he's got. That's really all he's. I mean, he may have more depth underneath all of that, but that's all he's got. Lupe is a. I mean, they practically wrote SB4 as a statement to Lupe Valdez,
mm-hmm. And that's the sanctuary city's bill,
right?
Law.
So I mean, she's
Dallas is not a sanctuary city, and she doesn't work for the city. She's with the county, but.
Right.
Still.
Right. And there's really no such thing as a sanctuary city. And
right. There are no sanctuary cities in Dallas. In Texas, right.
She's never broken the law. She just doesn't make it the priority of chasing down undocumented people like Abbott would really like and Patrick would really like to have.
Well, she has the right answer to that one. She says, whenever INS has asked us to cooperate, we have.
Absolutely, she has. And, you know, and so I think, you know, she has a long history with Abbott over this issue and others. And I think it could be a really, activating kind of a race in the state where people can look at this and say, I know where I've come down on which side I come down on. And I think you could activate a lot of voters who haven't voted in the past. And I think she's got that real potential because she has... she has this history with him, and she has a history of standing very firmly. And remember, she was elected to her fourth term,
mm-hmm.
her fourth term as Dallas County Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
So she's no slouch when it comes to needing millions of votes and getting them.
Here's where, whether or not she wins, if she is on the top of the ticket, there are a couple of congressional districts that are kind of borderline, purplish.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans are in those seats right now. Democrats could take them by having a woman, by having someone Hispanic. And the ones I'm thinking are in Central and South Texas, so big Hispanic populations and 51% women. You know, people who are going to criticize her for things like, oh, you're soft on crime. No, I think I was sheriff.
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
So she'd be a good candidate. Even if she doesn't win, I could see her having an effect on the election.
Oh, so, big time. And, yeah. I think the reality is that the GOP in Texas, which is a unique animal... they put the extra X in extreme. They had a wake up call at the November 2016 election. You know, Hillary came within 9 points statewide, which is closer than any presidential candidate.
Obama was 14 points and 17 points.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been narrowing some.
Yeah.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. We're going to take this break and come back and have our show put together.
This is Rollins Gellin, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And I want to send our love out to Louise Young. Louise is in the hospital right now recovering. She's doing great.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to give a whole lot of details because, you know, it's kind of personal. But She's doing great, and Louise, we love you if you're listening. She's a regular listener, and she's been on our show any number of times for years and years and years. So, Louise, we love you. I love that you're able to, that you're recovering so quickly. She sent out a video to a few people this week, and she's doing well.
Love you, Louise. Love you, Viv. All if you need anything.
And a couple of weeks ago, Roy Moore didn't get elected. He doesn't know that yet.
I was going to say, he still hasn't conceded.
No. I think he thinks that if he doesn't concede, the election's not over.
That's what he thinks. I think that's really what he thinks. And certainly, the first night when he wouldn't come out and concede that he was going to wait, I thought, he really believes this. That if he doesn't concede, that guy can't be seated in the Senate.
But, I mean, is this surprising to anybody? Not me. It goes right along with everything else he's done in his career.
Mm-hmm. Now, Roy Moore, for anybody who doesn't know, he holds a record for being impeached from office twice, both from the Supreme Court of Alabama.
Supreme Court.
Once as Chief Justice. Was he Chief Justice the first time? No. He was just.
He was Chief Justice both times.
He was Chief Justice. Okay. Once for ignoring a federal order to remove the Ten Commandments from his courtroom, was it?
The building.
Outside the building.
Outside the building. It was a statue. And this time for saying that Alabama law is higher level than the U.S. Constitution when it comes to marriage equality.
And right. the ruling in Obergefell v. Hodges mm-hmm. by the Supreme Court.
Right. So
he told judges in that state not to, or the probate judges are the ones issuing marriage licenses in the state of Alabama.
And he told them not to issue to
right. same-sex couples.
So he was removed from office. So what did he do? He ran for Senate, started running for Senate, and it turns out he had sex with a 14-year-old, or he didn't have sex with her. He went out with her.
Well,
it was the 16-year-old.
He assaulted her.
He assaulted her.
He got her undressed.
Oh, okay.
In his apartment, in his home.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then other allegations about him came out.
He was banned from the mall because they, people knew him. That's the guy you got to watch out for around your daughter.
And this happened then.
Yes.
Yes. At that time, right?
I mean, really, things have got to be bad. You're banned from the mall.
Right. Yeah.
Seriously.
And you know what's scary to me? It's like, oh my gosh, this guy must have been really a creep, because who wants to go to the mall besides teens and tweens?
Exactly.
I mean, nobody wants to go to the mall. No adult.
So my favorite part of the election was the night before, two nights before, Roy Moore's wife was talking about how, you know, we've been accused of being prejudiced. And she talked about their black friend, and then she talked about their Jew lawyer. So I said, ooh, they have a Jew lawyer. I have Jew lawyer relatives in Alabama. So I called my cousin, didn't call, on Facebook we're talking, my cousin Jefferson. His mother lives in Montgomery, distant cousin, so I'm not sure exactly even how he's related, but his mother lives in Montgomery. He's in Athens, Georgia. He contacted his mother. His mother assured us that, no, the Jew lawyer is not a taffet.
Well, and
then during that discussion, though, somebody else came on and said, oh, I know who the Jew lawyer is, and he may be Roy Moore's attorney, but he's a big Doug Jones supporter.
Oh, nice news for your family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, she came out and said, the way she said it was just so... She didn't hear herself. She didn't even hear what she said. Like she said, as if, she goes, well, I want to tell the media while they're all here so they don't miss it. Like it was, like, she's proud to say this. She says, one of, like big old gotcha, you know, one of our attorneys is a Jew. And she, lady, you don't even hear yourself.
Yeah.
You don't even, you are so clueless.
Clueless.
Patty, one of our co-hosts is black.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way she said this stuff, you know? I'm like, they don't even hear themselves. They have no clue just how racist they sound.
So anyway, Doug Jones won by a point and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a narrow victory, but in Alabama, for a Democrat to win,
But for me, the whole victory was bittersweet. I am so elated that he won, but look what it took for him to win.
Yeah.
The opponent had to be a child molester?
A child molester. You know, and he still didn't blow him out of the water. So, I mean, it's a bittersweet victory.
Like, it really should have been, once that news came out, it really should have been like a 90-10 race.
Thank you. Thank you, Patty. Exactly.
And we're talking about 1.5%.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, that just tells you where we really are in this country.
But that started when the Donald Trump tape came out.
Exactly.
And grabbed him by the...
Exactly.
You know.
That should have been the end of that also. Not only was it not close, he won.
Well, the New York Times is reporting today that from several sources that were in this meeting, that Donald Trump said some pretty amazing things about people who are not exactly like him. He was talking about immigration, and he said that the 15,000 people who've immigrated to the United States from Haiti, he said they all have AIDS.
Mm-hmm. Because
that's his
the
perception.
Entire country has AIDS, right? Mm-hmm.
And he said that 40,000 people had come in from Nigeria.
Do you know
and
that?
And once they'd been seen in the United States, they'd never go back to their huts in Africa.
Hmm.
Yes, he said that.
You know that cluster of AIDS that started in Haiti, there were several clusters. One was in the gay community, one was in the Haitian community. That Haitian community cluster did not expand after that initial cluster, or maybe it expanded a little bit for a couple of years. But it was not one of the groups that particularly had HIV more than anybody else after the first couple of years of HIV. So that's so antiquated. You know, it's one of those, I heard something 40 years ago and 30 years ago, and that's my truth.
He's stuck in 1983. And in fact, that's what Keith Boykin alluded to, was that his understanding of HIV and AIDS is stuck in 1983. Mm-hmm. And certainly his perceptions of,
I think a lot of
Haitians
about Donald Trump is stuck in 1983.
Oh, big time.
If not 1963. So.
Fine, 1863.
Thank you. But if we could go back to Roy Moore for a moment. Mm-hmm. We didn't mention that he posted on his Facebook page and a picture of Doug Jones' son, Carson Jones, who happens to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And but he posted a picture of him, and then at the bottom says, Doug Jones' gay son is thrilled by the Alan Bevel win. So he was putting it out there like, this is news, how bad is this? Now, he was taken down fairly quick.
Who put it out there?
Somebody put it on Roy Moore's Facebook page. And they're saying it was probably somebody in his staff. But then, you know, he's had some choice words about the guy. But the interesting thing is, it's like, okay, Roy Moore, you have a son also who's been arrested 9 times and is still under current charges.
For what?
They range from drunk driving, disorderly conduct, and so forth. So, but you're trying to point out...
Well, he's gay.
He's gay.
It's kind of like the bathroom bills.
That's the only thing bad you got to say about him? He's gay?
It's the bathroom bills. We understand that every transgender person, but we're going to have people dressing up as women just so they can go into the women's rooms to molest other women. So we have to ban all transgender people who don't do this
right.
from women's bath. It's the same argument. It's the same mentality.
Well, and so. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, her daddy, you know, has been, Mike Huckabee's been sitting on this butte as he criticizes other people and other people's kids. But his son, her brother, was arrested for torturing a dog. You know, that's the kind of stock they come from, I guess. You know, if we're going to play this, mm-hmm. you know, let's look at our kids' game.
Yeah, and we might as well throw in another great family with great family values out there, Sarah Palin, her son who just got arrested for beating up his dad.
Again.
Yeah, all that family values.
Yeah.
Yeah. they need to protect everybody from the queers.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
While we're talking kind of about trans, the ban on trans people enlisting in the military ends January 1st. It went to court twice. It got thrown out of court twice. And the argument that it will hurt military cohesion has been, you know, where that even came from. It came from the same place that gay people don't make good parents. Okay, so let's do some studies, and we really don't want to say anything about all you straight people, but every single study has come out that shows that if you're raised by two moms, you will tend to be better off than anybody else. Number two, if you're raised by two dads. And number three, if you're raised by a mom and a dad. And number four, single-parent households. So it's that same mentality. Well, that
it's also what also started that kind of is very similar to the bathroom bill or the bathroom argument. Very early on when we were trying to get Don't Ask, Don't Tell overturned completely, mm-hmm. one of the biggest arguments for it was, what are you going to do because they shower together? Mm-hmm. Same mentality. It's like you take a shower, you get out.
Mostly they don't. But
yeah, exactly. Mostly they don't. But that was one of the big mm-hmm. arguments for it.
Oh, yeah. It's
but the trans ban, every branch of the military is for accepting trans people. Every branch of the military has found hundreds, if not thousands, of trans people already serving. And you know how they do? They tend to excel because when you're put in a position where you're being questioned and you have to prove yourself and you just want to make sure you go that extra step and you do your job better. And it's not that they're saying trans people are better than anybody else. They're saying that trans people do just as good a job as anybody else.
Of course.
And they have the examples already there in the military. So there's no reason for this trans ban. The only limitation on trans people enlisting is they do have to be stable in their gender for, I think, a year and a half, something like that. I think it's a year and a half.
For what?
Because they don't want people who are transitioning.
No, I get that. But mm-hmm. you said stable in their gender for what?
You mean stable in their transition?
Their transition needs to be, they need to have transitioned for a year.
Oh,
I wasn't under the impression
they were
not accepting hadn't transitioned.
Oh, if they haven't transitioned, then I think they're considered the sex that they're living. If they don't want people who are in the middle of their transition coming into the military, they want you to finish your transition and then join.
Well, because they don't want to pay for it. That's let's be real. That's how it all came up. It was in the budget.
So wait, what about if you're already enlisted and then you start to transition?
That's the whole budget thing that started all this.
Are you removed? Does that come back? That's interesting. I just never heard of that.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
I'm not sure if the funding's there for that or the...
Mm-hmm. I really think, though, that when people are transitioning, they're going through quite a bit. And they want people who are... They've transitioned, they're comfortable with who they are, and does it take the same amount of time for everybody? No. I guess they took a survey and took an average amount of time. They want people who are, and the word that I saw in the news was stable. Not that somebody who's transitioning is unstable, but
the word transition kind of is itself defines right. movement
right.
from one state
so
to
they
another.
Want somebody who
I guess I kind of see what you're saying. They are going through a lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, you're going through family issues. You're going through issues with friends. You're learning about who you are in a way that you didn't think when you weren't living as
that
gender.
You could be not that they all, you could be going through some physical changes.
Right, right. So you can enlist with an enlistment date down the road, but they want people who are, you've transitioned. And then once you've transitioned, you're great.
We need somebody from the military on as a guest to answer those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I never heard. Yeah, recent.
under this surreal thing.
Right.
We have a minute. Patty, do you have something quick?
Well, there was yet another nominee for from this White House who was unqualified, in fact, anti-qualified, who was dropped, who was from here in Texas, who was, famous for saying that transgender children were Satan's plan, quote, Satan's
plan.
Wow. But he's been withdrawn. And we all know the guy who made the news, getting grilled by Senator Kennedy from Louisiana on basic law and totally failed.
It was for a D.C. the D.C.
A federal bench that for a lifetime appointment to a federal bench.
But it's the D.C. Appeals Court, which is the court that more Supreme Court justices have been chosen from than any other court.
Right. But all these guys have been withdrawn from by what's his name that says that all Asians have AIDS.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Josh is here working the board. And Josh, take it away.
Hi, this is Valletta Lil, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Patty is going to sit out the next conversation. The tax overhaul bill passed this week.
No, she might want to join in. I think this affects her also.
The tax?
Yeah. The tax overhaul bill.
The tax overhaul bill.
The scam, the GOP scam bill.
Right. Do you know?
It's horrific.
I don't know a whole lot about it. Because I don't know that anybody's read it.
Right.
Here's one thing that I thought was interesting. For the coming year, I will file as single instead of married filing jointly. I sent a message to the accountant who does our company's payroll. And he said, oh, that doesn't affect anything anymore. I don't understand why.
What do you mean? What doesn't affect what?
He said there aren't deductions now.
Oh, well, it's because they're as Aaron calls it, the you're alive and breathing deduction is going to be so large under this bill that nobody will be able to itemize.
Right.
The only reason people itemize is because they feel like they can come out higher than the
I'm not talking about itemizing. I'm talking about the amount that's deducted from my check when I was married is different than the amount that comes out of my check as a single because it's a different tax rate.
Well, the rates have all changed, too. So I don't know how that might affect.
I don't either. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know either. But
the only thing I know, which, the ones that we benefit from is the mortgage deduction was put back in, and I think the child credit was decreased.
But you can only write off your interest, your mortgage interest, if it's below $500,000.
Yes.
So that McMansion you have over there on Garland.
I know.
If they just waited a few more years, you could have gotten all that interest in.
It affects other cities more than us. Because the average home in New York and California is way over that.
Sure. True.
So the average house in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I just heard the number, it's 240-something thousand, something like that. But that same house in San Francisco would be close to a million. So it does affect different states differently. You can't deduct dependents such as elderly parents that you're caring for in the new bill. I know when my father was in nursing care because he had Alzheimer's, I was taking care of him. I was paying his monthly rent, and I got to deduct him for the year and a half, two calendar years that he was there, because that's how it works. The person taking care of other people, so that really says something about Congress. You know, we don't want kids to take care of their elderly parents.
Oh, there's so much,
and it's not
so much message coming out of Congress saying, you know, we don't want people to, you know, at the we want to raise taxes on the you know, people in poverty levels and low income. That's who's going to pay.
Chip,
we're borrowing money in order to give a massive $1.5 trillion tax break to the richest people in this country. We're borrowing money to give them a $1.5 trillion tax cut.
And yet CHIP is still not funded. CHIP is the Children's Health Insurance Plan. So we're pro-life until the kid is born.
We're pro-birth.
Exactly. Pro-birth. Exactly.
After that, you're on your own.
Yep, totally on your own. Your parents don't get any help, you don't get any help, unless you're rich. And then you get all kinds of breaks.
Yep. CHIP at the last minute was funded for another 2 or 3 months, something like that. And they can't figure out how we're going to fund this. Well, how are you funding the 17% tax cut for corporations? Why wasn't that an issue for that? Whereas this is kids' lives. On the Gay Show, we're talking about saving kids' lives. Isn't that interesting? It's our concern. Why isn't it Congress's concern? A lot of them have kids.
Oh, they don't care. They don't give a flip about the American people. This is all about their cronies, and we've seen it time and again. We do these stupid tax cuts for the rich. They're already sitting on $3 trillion in cash. Mm-hmm. They haven't reinvested in the American people. They haven't given working Americans and working families raises. They haven't done anything with that cash except, you know, that's their play world, the richest people in America. And so they're going to keep doing this. We've seen it happen time and again. It never, quote, trickles down. This is where they had the skit on SNL with the ant farm in the 80s. That was President Reagan explaining his trickle-down theory. And he goes, well, if you feed the ants at the top, the strong ants can get to the top and bring the food down to the other ants in the farm. And they had to turn and say, Mr. President, all the ants at the bottom are dead. Because that's not what they do. They don't share their food. They don't trickle down.
Okay, so after the Reagan tax cuts, Republicans in the next election lost 27 seats. That tax cut was nowhere near as disastrous as this one appears to be. It was not a $1.5 trillion added to the deficit. It was not a huge cut for corporations in the same way. Not this large. There was a cut for corporations, but not like this. What do you think?
Oh, this is big blue wave, 2018 blue wave.
Okay,
another big item that happened this year. We can't not talk about the Me Too phenomenon, and particularly with how it hit our party with the resignation of Al Franken. What do y'all think about that? Because you know, I saw Democrats online really going crazy about him. Resigning, saying that he shouldn't have. And one of the comments that I saw was, of course, Democrats taking the high road to nowhere.
I don't know if it's a high road to nowhere. I think,
what do y'all think?
I think they did it because, and when I say they did it, other Democrats in the Senate pressured Al Franken to resign. I think they did it to make a point. Alabama has a pedophile running for office right now. That's not us. I think they want to draw a clear distinction for the next election. And was he sacrificial? Was what he did, if you had to rate what different people did.
Yeah, because there's a difference. There's a distinct difference between pedophilia and sexual harassment.
And let's take Roy Moore out of it. If you have to choose between, not choose between, if you had to rank, you know, what Al Franken did with what what's his name on Fox News paid off. I don't know how many people.
Oh,
are you talking about Ailes? Or are you talking about
Yeah, exactly. Any of them.
Or Matt Lauer, you know, there's a whole list of them you can
The 32 out. Million, the ding-a-ling, what's his name? Blowhard on Fox. Got fired. Can't think of his name. Good. I can't think of his name. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Can't think of his name.
Yeah, same here.
You know, there's gradations. I think that the Democrats who pressured Al Franken to resign were saying, we have to draw a line. We're sorry. And had it just been the original allegations, he would have gotten through that. A whole bunch of others came out that happened after he came into office. Some of them he claimed he didn't do. Some of them he
Correct.
Claimed, I remember that happening, but that's not how I remember it happening. You know, the truth is in there somewhere in between.
I guess my question with all of this, not just Al Franken, but again, I'm just talking about sexual harassment, not pedophilia. To me, that's almost unforgivable. But with these sexual harassment allegations, with all of these people in the public eye, at what point are we supposed to say, okay, they have apologized, they did their time, whatever that time might be, are they allowed back?
Well, the woman here would like to answer the question, the previous question, and that is that I think I really like Al Franken a lot and always have. I think he's doing the right thing by leaving. I think as a Democrat and as part of the resistance and all of this stuff that's coming up this year in this crazy year. I think it's really important for women to take a stand, and I think the party to stand with women and to believe women.
But haven't men always looked out for women?
Pardon me?
Haven't men always looked out for women? I'm trying to say that with a straight face.
Keep trying.
Okay.
You know, I think they're starting off in the right place. And, you know, a lot of people can say, well, let's play hardball with the GOP. That seat's gonna be in play. So then how is that different than saying, oh, we need the seat for the pedophile because we need the seat?
I don't agree with that.
I don't see we keep the seat because, you know, we need the seat more than we need to address sexual harassment.
A Democrat was appointed to that seat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's the last of my concern.
Yeah, I'm like, let's go past that.
You need to do what's right.
There's a lot of pushback from Democrats, though, about keeping that seat. I was like, oh, let's not go there. That's not a good rationale for us.
I agree with you there, Patty. I just wonder, because in Al Franken's situation, with the previous, I think, you know, however long ago, accusations, he did it. You know, he fessed up to those. He apologized, and the woman did accept his apology. So I was just wondering if this happens in a similar situation. At one point, they would say, okay, they apologized. The accuser accepted the apology. They did their time. Do we move on?
Well, I tend to agree with Kirsten Gillibrand about this. And that's, you know, we have to step up and show some leadership as well. You know, and she goes, I'm tired of parsing sexual harassment versus sexual assault versus groping versus, you know, all rape. Of these different terms.
Yeah, versus rape. And, I mean, because that's some of the accusations.
You know, all of it is wrong. All of it.
All of it is wrong.
And if we don't step up and show some leadership here, that none of it is acceptable, not one bit of it is acceptable, not any part of it, from the least to the most, we're not going to parse it anymore. It's all wrong. That's what we need. That's what we need to step up and do. And imagine a world where men were put on notice that they're like, oh, well, we need due process. Well, screw due process. You know how many women have been raped in this country who've never gotten due process because it's a patriarchy, because it's set up for guys to you know, not go to jail, not be tried for crimes like rape. So screw that. Let's flip the tables, and the default is that you will be caught, you will be told on, you will go to jail. You will go to trial. You will lose your ass if you do this, if you behave this way. And let men live in the same kind of fear that women have been living in for 50 years, for 100 years, for millennia.
Oh, yeah.
Let them live that way. And I'm sorry, guys. That's just the way it is. You're just going to have to live that way.
Oh.
And if you want to be out there in front and say, I don't harass women, I don't say derogatory things to women, I don't call women girls, and while I call men, I don't do any of that stuff. You know, I'm not a man, and you're a lady. That's don't even get me started on that. But you know, we don't do any of that stuff. So if I want to stand out and be okay in this society like that, then I don't touch women. I don't do anything remotely close to it. My behavior has changed. My behavior will always be different going forward.
When men ask,
that's what we need.
When men ask, well, how should I treat the woman in the office? The same way you treat the man in the office.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how it works in my office.
That's how it works in my office.
It never occurred to me to treat anybody differently. And that doesn't include showing body parts. It doesn't include, I heard a discussion about, well, is it okay to go out with somebody in the workplace? Depends. If it's not somebody that is working for you, if it is somebody working for you, No. And by working for you, I mean in your chain of command. But I work in a small company. Have there ever been any office romances? Yeah. But if the other person says no.
They've done a survey, though, and they've said that this is crazy. 1 out of 5 men believe that sexual harassment shouldn't even be a fireable offense.
Are you serious?
Serious.
Wow.
2/3 of men believe that unwanted requests for dates and go out to lunch and that sort of thing, unwanted, is perfectly okay.
Now,
they don't think that's the form of sexual harassment.
Okay.
If they repeatedly ask a coworker.
Repeatedly.
Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with asking somebody on a date one time. If they say no, you need to leave it alone.
That's repeated, unwanted requests.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, the lunch thing, different offices are different. And in some offices, hey, I'm going out to lunch. Anybody want to go? Patty, do you want to go with me? No. Hey, I'm going out to lunch. Lauren, you want to go? Patty, you want to go? And it could be that one person is just hearing the Patty, do you want to go? And I really don't want to go with him. And not hearing, I'm just asking around the office. That's not the common thing that's happening, though. The normal thing that's happening is that it's directed at one person.
Yes.
It's repeated. It's almost to the point of being threatening that if you don't, you could lose your job.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we're out of time, and that's our year-end review next week. Mark Farris is our guest. He is running for the Texas State Senate from Senate District 8.
It'll still be 2017 next Sunday.
I know. I'm saying, but that's our we kind of did our newsy review, and we're moving on to next year next week because we are.
We're ahead of the curve.
Well, it's the last day of the year. So, but I asked Mark for this week, and he was busy this week. He's not busy next week. This is really not interesting. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, Lauren, have a Merry Christmas.
You too.
We'll see you before New Year's. And for the chick on the show, is that how you wanted to be rude?
She's the lady of the
house.
Choose
carefully.
The lady on the show.
She's the lady on the show.
No, I'm not the lady on the show. She's, Aaron's the wife. Patty Fink.
There you go. There you go.
There you go.
That's right.
The activist on the show. We'll see you next week.